Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. It is a little over a minute past the hour. Call it a minute and a half past the hour on this 24th day of March, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the free and wildly accessible Horn chat room, where you, if you pick out a screen name and a password, will be greeted by the likes of Anatole, Jugapunch, Laborman, VT Blom, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. Yes, more will be filing in. Probably, I don't know, maybe people time these things so that because they know I spend X amount of time on the intro every evening. But that's where that is. Let's see. I probably need to explain my absence last evening. No. Despite the fact that some people did connect the dots, it had absolutely nothing to do with the Mountaineers' Sweet 16 game against Gonzaga. I didn't even watch. I was exhausted. I mean, just plumb wore out. A couple of nights of not doing much in the way of sleeping, and I was, I don't think I could have strung three words together. And fortunately, it's not all related to my health. There's a little familial drama taking place as well. But I didn't watch. I've said it before. Remember? I deliberately announced back in December that I was playing hooky for one night to go and watch the Mountaineers play in the, some point on the compass Florida Bowl. They were playing, I can't remember which one it was, but anyway, I played hooky one night to watch the Mountaineers. No, it was the night that we played Oklahoma. And got sick. And watched the Mountaineers absolutely humiliate themselves. I mean, so that happened both in the bowl game and against Oklahoma. So it could be either one. No, it wasn't against Oklahoma because that was a Saturday. So it was the bowl game I played hooky for. But I announced, you know, straight up, hey, I'm playing hooky. And then the Mountaineers lost. Conversely, I deliberately stayed away from rounds 1 and 2 of the NCAA tournament, in which the Mountaineers beat Bucknell and then beat Notre Dame. And so I thought I would stick with what was working. So I deliberately did not watch last night. Instead, waking up this morning to read the news reports, which I knew would not be good because of an email that I saw coming from our buddy Todd in South Carolina, Stan, who said simply, "Damn, that's heartbreaking." The Mountaineers had that one in the bag. Yeah, I don't know. It looks like from the accounts that I subsequently read, they had themselves to blame as much as anything else. But my beloved Mountaineers are out of the dance, and my brackets are a freaking shambles. Not because I had the Mountaineers going to the Final Four. Oh no! I'm not that. No, I'm not. I mean, I'm a homer and everything, but I ain't that much a homer. But I did have, I had Arizona in the championship game. I know. But I did. And Xavier put paid to that last night. So, yeah. it was a, well, so I guess maybe, I mean, is there any good to be had in this? It is this much. Apparently, when the Mountaineers lose, it is not necessarily always my fault. It wasn't last night because I didn't watch. In fact, I was asleep. But anyway, that's why there was no program last night. A whole lot of stress, anxiety, aggravation, and exhaustion caught up with me. And I'm sorry. And since I feel like that one was on me, I'm not including that in the fundraising goal. You know, we try to raise $200 every evening, and last night would have been no different. But that one was on me. So instead, we find ourselves with a $225 fundraising goal this evening, which is not terrible. And hopefully we'll meet it and finish the fundraising for the week in reasonably decent shape. So that's where we find ourselves. If you'd like to help out, of course, you know the PayPal link is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. If you would like to become a monthly subscriber, something we badly need, we'd like to have 400 at $10 a month. We're still working on getting to 800, and we're not very close to that either. But if you just tick the little box there that says make this a recurring monthly donation. If you don't want to check the little box, just put in a number. $10, $20. Or, you know, Mr. Soros can put in $10,000. That's a standing offer. But we'll rename this the Soros Broadcasting Network if he'll do that. I mean that sincerely. Thank you, Larry, for getting us started. We're now down to $220 to go. Thank you, Larry, very kindly indeed. If you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, well, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. Okay? And so that's where that stands. And hopefully, you know, one at 220, two at 110, four at 55, eight at 2750, et cetera. And we'll be done with fundraising for the evening. This is, of course, Friday on the Front Porch, which means that in approximately 50 minutes or so, we will fire up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group and engage in a freewheeling conversation with the Extraordinary Ordinary Horn Roundtable. If you've never participated in that before, well, it's a lot of fun. And you can get involved by firing up your copy of Skype and sending a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C. Sparky Dunk. And he'll show you the breadcrumb trail. And he'll show you what it looks like when we put the bob signal on and shine it up against the clouds. No, it's not. No, it is not, Billable Rick. No, it is not. Quit it. Hi, Bob. It is your fault the Mountaineers lost. You should have watched them. No. Don't try that reverse psychology crap on me. Rick says they needed your help. Actually, that tall white guy would have clinched the game if he'd slam dunked the ball with 50 seconds left instead of trying to make a 2-foot finesse shot. But no, don't try that don't. Because see, I know what would have happened if it was a close game. It ended with the Mountaineers having a chance to make a 3-point shot. They just couldn't get it off. But if I had watched, the score would have been 192-13, and the Mountaineers would have been absolutely humiliated. That's how that works. Yes. So, where are we today? Well, I spent the better part of the day watching the unfolding drama of the try and care debate. And then, with the boat scheduled for about 4 o'clock, suddenly Paul Ryan spiked the ball out of bounds and went running up to the White House to tell President Post Comrade Kumquat to pull the bill, as if he, Paul Ryan, were not Speaker of the House, and that somehow Marcus Aurelius was. Because they couldn't get the votes. They couldn't get the 216 votes that they needed in order to and the reason, let's be clear, the reason they couldn't get their 216 votes is because there are people who send other people to the Congress who are really giant screaming assholes. And then there are the ones who make giant screaming assholes look like Quaker Sunday school students. And it was those who wouldn't get on board with putting the wood to a bunch of, to millions of Americans and killing some of them, because they wanted more people to have the wood put to them and more to be killed. That's where we are in the new 90 states of America. A deadly bill failed because a cadre of Republicans thought it was not deadly enough. I don't know about you, but I still find that considerably terrifying. And this is also a portion in the program, and you can mark it down on your calendar. It's no big deal. But this is an official announcement of, I was wrong. These things are rarities in broadcast talk radio. And so, but I have no particular reason not to when I am. And in this case, I was wrong. I said that Republicans being Republicans that they would eventually fall into line because they had a magnificent opportunity to screw over and kill millions of Americans, and I just couldn't imagine them not finally leaping at the opportunity. And so I was wrong about it. I guess I'll have to tear one tattered moon and or star off of my threadbare, moth-eaten purple robe with the moons and stars appliqued on, and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby," written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front. And well, there's not much you can do to the magic eight ball. It's cracked, and it just always says, "Answer hazy, ask again later." You know, that's true. I forgot about that. Brother Deacon Asa points out, "Billable Rick neglects the fact that had you watched the Mountaineers game, they would have lost, and you'd have ended up with a fly in your beer." That happened, too. Not last night, but, bowl game. Had to pull the little bastard out and shake him and say, "Get out! Spit it out! Spit it out, you little wee skirt Farrelly!" Right. But I was wrong. Now, am I going to stay wrong? That remains to be seen. Will they come back for it? Because I watched a little bit of Eddie Munster's petulant little news conference in which he kept repeating, "We tried to help the American people. We really tried. We were going to help them into an early grave. We were going to help them not have so much filthy money laying around because they were going to be spending it on increased healthcare prices. We tried to help the American people. And what do we get? You know what? The Freedom Caucus is why we can't have nice things." And I'm not entirely convinced that they won't come back to this like a dog returning to its let's not ruin anybody's dinner here in the 6 p.m. hour if we can possibly avoid it. But you get my meaning. So, can they come up with a plan that? No. And here in West Virginia, and this is I found this interesting. Here in West Trump, Virginia, the assholes that we sent to the Congress, the assholes that other assholes sent to the Congress, I tried to prevent it. They were ready to vote yay. I mean, I spent all afternoon waiting for the roll call vote. Mr. Asshat, yay. Ms. Thumbfingers, yay. Mr. Jackass, yay. Because I knew that in that number would be Evan Jenkins and David McKinley. And I wasn't sure if Looney Mooney was the other one. I wasn't sure if he was Freedom Caucus or if he was, no, really, let's screw him good. But one member of the West Virginia delegation presents a rather significant question. And it is, in a larger scope, a question worth pondering. David McKinley represents the northern, more or less the northern part of the state. Morgantown, Clarksburg, Fairmont, places like that. And he's pro-co. And him and Evan Jenkins, they's real proud. Real proud. To be right there when we overturned the stream protection rule so us hillbillies could have some more pies in our water, thanks to mountaintop removal, because they's part of bringing back coal. And David McKinley was a yay vote. Mr. Knob Polisher, yay. Mr. McKinley, yay. And so he and Evan Jenkins and Looney Mooney were all set to take health care away from a whole bunch of hillbillies. And they were equally set on the idea of making it near to impossible for the remaining coal workers we have who get black lung to get black lung benefits. So far, it sounds pretty typical, just Republican behavior, right? Sure. Here's where it gets interesting. Back in November, when he was running for re-election, David McKinley was endorsed by the building trades of this, of West Virginia. You know, your carpenters and millwrights, your laborers, your pipe fitters, your sheet metal workers, and so forth. Yeah. Traditional elements of the traditional Democratic labor coalition. And so, just so we're really clear on this, the guy the building trades endorsed was all set to vote yes on a bill that would have taken health care away from tens of thousands of West Virginians and screwed over the brothers and sisters of the building trades in the United Mine Workers and anybody else who works in and around coal. Now, you can't blame this on Trumpism. And you can't blame this on, ooh, they were economically insecure. Or, ooh, you can't even blame it on anti-Obama racism. Sparky tells me, yeah, the electricians too, Bob. Well, there you go. That strikes me as being an indication of just, you know, of just how screwed up so-called liberal progressive politics have become. When the backbone, the mother church, if you will, of progressivism, that is labor, can't even bring itself to vote in favor or to support a Democratic challenger to an incumbent right-wing House member who hates their guts. Then, well, Houston, we got a problem. We've really, really got a problem. Because that kind of shows that traditional liberal progressive coalitions have lost their way. But for the time being, even though Paul Ryan is out there saying, Obamacare is failing. God damn it, it's failing. It won't be here for very long. Oh, my God, it's going to disappear. Oh! The fact of the matter is, that is a howling lie. It's just a talking point. Alongside the talking point about how... Oh, how does this one go? Medicaid is bleeding the states dry. Hey, assholes. Medicaid is sent from the federal government. And where the Medicaid expansion is concerned, states that accepted the Medicaid expansion will never have to pay more than 5% of the Medicaid expansion's cost as a matter of law. So when they say that Medicaid is doing harm to the states, well, they're doing what Republicans do best. They're, you know, lying. And in point of fact, the states where maybe the states are having a hard time making up the Medicaid funds, stand by. ...48 degrees in the studio a couple of nights ago. Today it's 80. Well, states like Texas and Alabama and Mississippi stand that have such deep and abiding moral objections to providing health care to poor people. Well, they would have tons and tons and tons of free money if only they had accepted the expansion. And their Medicaid bills would not be nearly as bad as what they are. Shh. Don't tell them. No, do tell them. And more than that, tell the people. A lot of people already know, but they're not being listened to. People all over Texas and Alabama and South Carolina stand know that they desperately need the Medicaid expansion. It's just that the people that the assholes keep sending into office because of things like gerrymandering, well, they don't give a damn. They really, really don't. During the floor debate today, I saw South Dakota's one lone member of the House come forward. Some woman with a name I can't, Noe or Noel or something, came forward to talk about how if we don't pass this bill, the Democrats' dream of universal single-payer health care, where the government controls all your health care decisions, is one step closer to reality. And I couldn't help thinking, lady, what are you smoking? And, you know, don't Bogart that. Pass it over. I wish what she was saying was true. But the problem is that the Affordable Care Act is a great big sugar tit. And you know what those are. For the insurance industry. Because, as Bernie and others keep mentioning, we are already paying more for less health care than we would be paying to get more health care if we had Medicare for all. I mean, all that money that they,
Oh, Jesus, Medicaid's going to go. Oh, we're going to go broke. All the states need relief.
Kevin Brady, Jesus, what a freak. He managed the Republican side of the debate today.
I've been receiving letters from
he sounded like about halfway like Hank Hill,
from governors begging us for relief. Please, please change Medicaid to block grants and just send us big wads of money that we can spend on little pet Republican political projects instead of spending it on useless people who want health care.
It's one of the unmentioned things that if we simply had Medicare for all, we don't need Medicaid. Medicare for all, we don't need VA benefit. I mean, exactly.
That boy ain't right.
Thank you, Steve from Georgia. Stan, exactly. My Hank Hill needs work. But if you have Medicare for all, VA medical benefits, Medicaid, various and sundry health care schemes that we've come up with over the years to prop up niches in places where people were most desperately in need, it's all rendered moot. Because everybody gets covered at the moment they are born. Regardless of color, regardless of gender. See how, yeah. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan. Christy Noem, N-O-E-M. Christy Noem, not much. Sorry, probably shouldn't have gone there. But she was, she was a real piece of work. She did everything but say that we were on the slippery slope to communism. But I have a feeling that it's going to be a long time before we see anything resembling universal single payer. Why, thank you, Gerald. Why, that's a bunch of socialism you're talking about there, Bob. Mm-hmm. So, Gerald adds, Medicare for all indeed. Harumph! I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Watch your ass. So, with the whole clusterfuck that was today's drama, it's no longer an English living room drama, now it's a circus picture. Well, that website that rhymes with light and fart have declared that they want to put Paul Ryan's pelt on their wall. I guess so. Louis Asparagus Gohmert or Steve Cantaloupe's King can be Speaker of the House. You got to admit that would be fun. Nah, it wouldn't be fun, dude. Well, you'd like to say entertaining, but probably not that either. But lo and behold, not that long ago, over on that website that rhymes with light and fart, Republican officials in Congress and the White House are now openly discussing finding a GOP replacement to Representative Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House after Ryan failed to pass the American Health Care Act out of the House and misled the public and President Donald Trump when he promised repeatedly the bill would pass. Yeah, I guess the Tangerine Tiberius didn't mislead the American people when he promised to, you'll have fabulous, beautiful health care. It'll be great health care. It'll be so much less expensive and everybody will be covered. Yeah, that wasn't it. Yeah. When he lies, it's just a day that ends in Y. Lying is what he does. I was out, by the way, just a little quick observation. I was out running around today, and I had National Petroleum Radio on. And I heard a rerun. Terry Gross has a sweet gig. How many days a week does she work anyway? There was a rerun of an interview that she did with a guy who wrote a book called Imbeciles about the American eugenics movement, the Supreme Court, and the impact that it had on the woman who lost the case. And along the way, you can't talk about that topic without talking about Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., a member and occasional espouser of some of the nastiest late 19th and early 20th century ideas about law and community and culture and the body politic and civil society that's ever come along. And yet he winds up being hailed as a real Solon. Now, honest to God, you look up elitist in an early 20th century dictionary. I think there's a picture of Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. But writing in the forced sterilization case, Ball, Holmes famously wrote, "Three generations of imbeciles is enough." And when I was reminded of that, I immediately thought, see, this is one of those moments that they teach you about in first year law school, where some silver-haired law professor will say in some stentorian voice, "Hard cases make bad law." And so in this particular case, looking at a woman of color, Oliver Wendell Holmes, elitist, decided that the United States needed to do more sterilizing and not less. And along the way said, three generations of imbeciles is enough. And it is recognized now as one of the most horrific, dare I say even proto-Nazi statements of the Supreme Court. It lives in infamy alongside the Dred Scott decision and Plessy versus Ferguson, the slaughterhouse cases, and that like. But then I realized that hard cases do make bad law, because I immediately pondered Donald Trump. And I thought about Donald Trump's Klansman daddy. And I thought about Donald Trump's cowardly pimp grandfather. And I realized that, by God, three generations of imbeciles was enough. Now we got five. I mean, goddamn, really? Did you see the picture of him getting to sit in the big truck? They even let him blow the horn. And I'm not sure if it was playing there on the White House lawn or if it was just the bumper music they were using on one of the TV channels, but I heard something. It was a light of the moon on the 5th of June in a Kenworth hauling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy. Hauling hogs. Yeah, we got us a little convoy. No, oh my God. Did you see him grab the wheel and hunch over it like he was, 3 years old? It was something to behold. And yeah, I'll say this. was another one of those moments, and there seemed to be oh so many of them, where you look up and go, gee, I don't remember President Obama ever making the presidency look stupid like that. No, I don't. And while, in fact, we all understand that she's the devil, I just can't quite imagine even Hillary, who, to be fair, is not the best with the photo op, hunched over an 18-wheeler steering wheel and honking of the horn. That's right. The truckers, and they weren't truckers, it was trucking companies, told Donnie he could honk the horn like a big boy, just like a real trucker. And then you have one of those existential nightmares. Because you look at him hunched in that photograph there, hunched over the steering wheel. And you think, jumping Jesus Christ on a Kenworth, Batman's got the power to launch nuclear weapons. And if that doesn't give you the fantods, well, I guess you're going to be okay for the next 8 years. But holy God. No small irony in the fact that we got that photo op within a couple of days of the discussion of the Trans Am frozen trucker case. I guess they didn't bring a truck with frozen up trailer brakes. Yeah. So it could be, based on what that website that rhymes with light and fart is saying, there may be a little bit of blood in the water. And the sharks may begin to circle. Who would replace him? Tough call. I don't know. I really don't know how to calculate the level of stupid required now to be Speaker of the House. And just in case you were hungry for a little bit of paranoia, FBI Director James Comey was seen on an unannounced and otherwise unexplained visit to the White House. That was today. The White House claiming it was for a routine interagency meeting. Well, sure. Didn't have anything to do with Russia. Absolutely not.
But there is the little issue, the story that just sort of blew past, kind of got lost in the shuffle with the business about inadvertently picking up Trump campaign and Trump officials' calls in in surveillance. Did you catch the story last week about the fact that in 2013, Trump Tower really was surveilled? And why? It was 2013, and people in Suite 61A or something like that were surveilled and eventually charged with criminal activity as part of a mobbed-up money operation. I'll go ahead and mention the fact that the people who were in the mobbed-up money operation were, come on, Russians. A couple were caught, but the head mobster is now back in Russia under the protection of sweet, cuddly, lovable Pooty Poot. This all sort of sunk beneath the waves with the announcement of the unintentional surveilling that had the for-profit media all a titter until the drama with the AHCA came along. But I saw one story earlier today that was highly speculative, kind of a dot connecting affair. That said that the person who may have been inadvertently surveilled because he was on a phone call with someone for whom there was already a FISA court warrant was, drumroll please, Mike Pence. And so the worm turns an itsy-bitsy bit. Remember, it was Mike Pence to whom Michael Flynn lied about his extracurricular Russian contacts. And it was Mike Flynn, it turns out, who engaged in conversations with his clients in Turkey. Remember, he was in the pay of the Turks, the Turkish government, the entire time that he was a key member of the Trump campaign. According to the Wall Street Journal, former CIA Director James Woolsey has stated that he was in a secret meeting last September with Mike Flynn to plan a covert operation to whisk away a man described as a fugitive cleric and hand him over to the totalitarian regime of Recep Erdogan in Turkey. The target of the kidnapping was to be Fethullah Gulen. Now, this is a man with oodles of money, formerly a friend of Erdogan, who has set up charter schools all over the country and preaches a version of Islam that says the most important thing in the world is the acquisition of knowledge, of learning. And the plan was to kidnap Fethullah Gulen from his compound in Pennsylvania and take him back to Turkey should Trump win the presidency. Former CIA director Woolsey went on to say that the plan, the intent of the plan, was to get around the ordinary course of U.S. extradition laws. He went Bill. Woolsey described it as a covert step in the dead of night to whisk this guy away. The Wall Street Journal said, it isn't known who raised the idea or what Mr. Flynn concluded about it. Fingers in pies, fingers in pies, fingers in pies. But see, this is all just manufactured sneer against, smear against poor, innocent Donald Trump by the deep state. You know, even if it's not, right? All right. Circles within circles. So it kind of makes you wonder, what next week holds. But that's kind of all the time now, isn't it? Note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Subject line, racist party or the rest of us, it's your choice. In the classic 1967 flick Cool Hand Luke, Strother Martin tells Paul Newman that he is getting a second set of chains for his own good. Luke's reply, I wish you'd stop being so good to me, Captain. Steve says, same with the American public. We'd all be just fine and a lot healthier if this planter class of wealthy elites would stop being so goddamn good to us. And isn't that the damn truth? Regards, Steve in China. Because every time some Republican stepped to the microphone during the debate today, it was all about how we're going to help the American people. And, you know, it was a steady parade of people from South Carolina and Texas and Alabama and Louisiana, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, with the occasional outlier Republican weirdo from upstate New York. But I couldn't help noticing that the majority of them seem to come from an ancient tradition of, well, slaveholding. And I'm sorry if the precious little wing nuts and mouth walkers and knuckle breathers don't like to have that issue brought up. But it's a fact. The Kevin Bradys and the Trey Gowdys and the various mush-mouthed assholes who were so much in view today seem to share a common heritage of oppression and brutality. And that's right frustrating. And that begs the question of what it takes to change things. Here in West Virginia, I hope that people will not, that come, you know, November after this, the 18 midterms, I sincerely hope that people will not let people like David McKinley and Looney Mooney and Evan Jenkins off the hook. You were all set to take our health care away until you were saved by the bell. You were all set to take black lung benefits away from coal miners who are damned well going to need it. But that's just one puny little state and three crummy little members of the House. The real question is what in God's name we have to do to win the cold Civil War and get these great 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 grandsons of the planter class the hell out of government. And I'm not going to say coming up after the break, I'm going to give you the answer because I don't. I don't have it. Maybe we can find an answer. Maybe we can process toward one. We will do that in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. I hope, because I've also been informed that, yes, the servers crashed. Again, some more. So, I mean, we'll take a break, and I will reach out to Ben Birch and see if he can figure out what in the hell's going on. And then, when we come back, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, because it's Friday on the front porch on the horn, and we got $220 to raise to finish the week even, minus the $200 that I penalized myself for over yesterday. And many thanks to our subscribers for keeping the hole from getting any deeper. Thank you very kindly. So a little bumper appropriate to overgrown toddlers who like to sit in big trucks, and then Friday on the front porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And dirt, bulldozers and dirt. What's your mama got hidden up her shirt? I like to play and I like to work. But most of all, I like bulldozers and dirt. I met your mom when I was 19. You could have been in North than three. She caught me stealing all this color TV. She called the cops and they arrested me. Not ever seen the way she pointed that.
I'd like to say the crashed server issue has been remedied, but it hasn't. And nonetheless, it's Friday on the front porch, and I'm going to try an experiment here and see if maybe we can at least get a little bit of extraordinary ordinary roundtable into the process. Let's check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob, you're back up. I hear the music. It hasn't caught up with me yet.
Oh, wait. Okay, so Well, Glory. Ben must have put the Healing Hands of Faith on it.
Yeah, my internet radio is back on, so you're good.
Well, that's a little bit of a relief.
Other than that, I thought UPS guy would show up, and I'd go work on the lawnmower, but everything's good.
You know, I've been speaking of lawnmowers. I've seen an ad, and I don't know if it's, you know, I wonder if I'm just, it's just a hustle, or if it really works as well as advertised. Have you seen the advertisements for this Ego lawnmower?
No, the one with a battery?
Yeah.
I've seen about their blowers and stuff, but I've never looked into the mower.
I mean, it looks like a regular, you know, walk-behind, self-propelled mower, what have you.
Yeah, it takes like a 54-volt lithium ion battery.
Yeah, I wonder how much the batteries are.
I don't know, but I imagine they're not cheap.
I imagine that, but that seemed... Because that's one of the things I like least about mowing grass, is sitting there and huffing, huffing small engine exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it would be entirely ineffective and largely useless for mowing an entire acre. But you know, just to do the area around the house, yeah, it might work for that.
Even with a battery, it'll still be lighter, and you will be shocked at how much quieter. I have electric lawnmower, and it was just unbelievable. Not having the noise gives you this tension while you're mowing the lawn, and it just felt like it wasn't even mowing the lawn. It was just walking behind it. I had a different model.
Yeah, well, you probably had what, the Black & Decker that you had to trail the cord behind?
Yeah, but it wasn't very bad in my lot because my lot was very long, so I could put the cord on one side, and as long as I kept going away from it each pass, I never got in the way of the cord.
Right. Now let's do remember, though, there's a reason I never bought a corded electric lawnmower, and it can be filed generally under the subheading of Bob Kincaid English Major. I always figured it was a lead pipe cinch guarantee that I would mow the cord.
You just never mow toward the cord. That's the rule I gave for my kids. You start on one side of the yard where your cord is, and every pass you get 3 feet farther away from the cord. So while the cord's coming toward you, you're going away from it. You never go toward the cord.
Yeah, see, there you go with all that engineering talk. It's meaningless to a guy who majored in you know, reading the 3rd century BC Roman freaking novel. And there's only one of them.
There is a trick to it, that's all I was saying.
Yeah, which is a trick which is not available to English majors. That's all I'm saying. But the battery idea really kind of spoke to me because there's no cord for English majors to mow.
Yeah, and lithium ions aren't that light, and we're probably talking lithium polymer batteries. So it might not be as bad as you think on weight-wise. And looking into lithium polymer batteries possibility for my house, they weren't really that expensive for my bike. I'm assuming the lawnmower would be similar to what I'm looking for with a 50-mile range for my bike. And I was looking at $100 in batteries.
That's not terrible.
No. And you probably need less power for the lawnmower.
Well, let's see. Oh, yeah, that's not. It's a 56-volt lithium-ion battery. The push, it goes anywhere from $329 to $783.32, just what I'm seeing on the on the web page, just searching it. 45-minute cut time, 30-minute charge time, advanced arc lithium 4.0 amp hour 56-volt battery and rapid charger, folds quickly and easily for compact upright storage.
And you need to buy a lock with it.
$549 at Home Depot.
I've got $449 here at Home Depot. Yeah. Maybe you've got the self-propelled.
Yeah, self-propelled. 60-minute cut time, 60-minute charge time.
Yeah, so I could get that and an extra battery and get the yard done.
I wouldn't even use the plan of the extra battery at first unless you really feel you need to do it all in one day.
It takes a little more than an hour to do the general area around the house.
That's a huge yard.
Yeah, the most expensive one they've got at Home Depot is $649. That's a 20-inch cut. But I saw my first ad for it today, and I was like, oh, that's intriguing. Because, you know, in spring, an older man's fancy turns to thoughts of yard mowing.
I've already been yard mowing.
Shut it, Sparky.
Now my mower threw a pulley. When the self-propelled built it, it come apart. So that's what parts I'm waiting for. It's a challenge to work on your own stuff too. And I have the I have the tools and the equipment to do it.
I've got a halfway decent weed whacker that I have to get repaired, and the push mower is just about done. But
I switched, I had six neighbors offer to come over and mow my lawn with a real lawnmower. Because they thought, since they couldn't hear it, that it was a weed whacker on wheels.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
I've got a little electric tiller I use to do the garden with. And it's all you got to do is till away from the cord, just like Snork was saying. I just put the cord over my shoulder and go.
Yeah, see, there are, I just got a message from Arnold. Only an hour to mow the lawn? Shit, it takes all day here, and my father and I both do lots of edging and fence posts and whatnot. I don't have to worry about that. I mean, I've got an acre, but there's no way to, I mean, it's just, no. Oh, hey, we've got a real-world testimonial here. Michael in Madison says, Ego mower. I've had one since I bought my house in 2013, push mower. I like it. Still on the original battery. Lasts me about 30 minutes. I can usually get about two-thirds of my lawn done. Throw the battery on the charger. Take a break. Grab some lemonade. Lemonade. In Wisconsin. Yeah, lemonade. And finish mowing. Or finish another day. No huffing gas. That was exactly my selling point. The handle on mine has a tendency to slip out of the lock position, which shuts it down. It's quite annoying. But it starts right back up instantly, so I've just dealt with the quirk rather than looking into fixing it. Well, I'm getting more and more intrigued. Now all I need is a Home Depot.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Rick.
I think what you need is a coal-powered mower.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Do some rolling coal. Some rolling coal on your, you know, back 40,
well,
right?
that's kind of what the older mower is right now.
Okay.
I mean, the choking black smoke that billows out of that thing is no joy. Well, it's more like blue smoke, but... But the thing is, if I hate to say this, but that would, if I had one of those Ego mowers, it would be a coal fired mower because I'd have to charge the battery, right?
That's true.
And all of my electricity, it comes through an ancient, rickety, about half fallen down, craptastic coal-fired power grid.
Well, I think it's time for you to do a GoFundMe or Kickstarter to, you know, to get off the grid, to get the program off the grid, and, you know, so you don't have to worry about, you know, these sorts of things, you know?
Well,
I bet you could get a cheap little solar panel that would charge that battery for you.
Well, that was my next thought. Wouldn't that be cool, just having a couple of solar panels out there hooked up to your electric mower, and piss off the friends of coal. They'd probably come and steal it. By the way, Asa, Brother Deacon Asa, also apparently has some experience. He says the Ego 56 volt battery is $200. The torque on it is incredible. It slices through overgrown grass like hot butter through a knife. Uh-oh, hot butter through a knife. That's not quite so... I'm going to have to ponder that.
It sounds like the greatest health care bill of 2017 that just went down in flames today, Bob. I'm so disappointed by that, you know?
Well, you know, golly. into each life, some rain must fall, right?
Yeah. Poor Paul Ryan, geez, you know?
Yeah, I'm still trying to work up a halfway competent sad for him, but I'll have to let you know when I get there.
Yeah, right. No, exactly.
By the way, just to throw this in there for everybody, takes it seriously, this is definitely not. For anybody who thinks that sweet little Pootie Poot is just a cuddly little Russian bear, Representative Mark Pocan, who is from Wisconsin, went on Michelangelo Senior Relay's show on Sirius XM and claimed to have seen what he calls damning evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. He said in the interview with Michelangelo Signorile, there are things that I know just that I've read in classified reports that I'm sure will still come out that will continue to be damning evidence when it comes to this relationship between the Russians trying to influence our elections and ultimately, I think, the Trump campaign's potential coordination on it. Wow. Meanwhile, and maybe this has something to do with that, Representative Adam Schiff, who is the ranking minority member on the Intel Committee in the House, is a mite pissed off because there was supposed to be a public hearing of the Intel Committee. And lo and behold, Devin Nunes, agent for the Trump administration, has just canceled it. Yeah, how about that? And you know, maybe people think I'm kidding when I say that the loopy left is out there screaming that there's no Russian problem. This is all, you know, this is all just deep state. There's this website, and I've seen references to it on a number of occasions. I've read several articles, and I have yet to discern any actual credibility from it. And this really apparently upset person named Caitlin Johnstone writes there, and yeah, no, she's not a Trump pansy. So dig this headline, just the headline. Dig this headline. Adam Schiff is a lying corporatist scumbag. Wow, he must have really peed in her Wheaties.
Bob.
Yeah.
Did you catch the competing press conferences that Devin Nunes gave first and then Adam Schiff gave right after this morning? Adam Schiff was basically very impromptu press conference. There were like stairs in the background and some microphones and a small, like, it was like in some kind of stairwell, essentially.
Broom closet?
Just below a stairwell. And, he was basically talking about how, how disappointed he was that the hearing set for Tuesday, at which I think, among other people, Sally Yates was going to be testifying, as well as, I think, James Clapper and one of the other intelligence guys, that had been canceled, and that in its place, Devin Nunes had apparently indicated that they would be talking to Paul Manafort behind closed doors. but all those guys have lawyered up. I mean, they are in full-on cover-up, Bob. This is actually the most serious crisis, constitutional crisis we've had. It's even way more serious than Watergate in terms of the effect on national
security.
Well, I mean,
you know where I come down on that, Rick. Watergate was not, and I saw an article the other day that cited Dan Rather, whom I respect,
right,
describing Watergate as a constitutional crisis. It wasn't.
Yeah, that's true.
It wasn't.
The system worked back then because people were, you know, it was country first rather than party first. Now it's the opposite. You know?
And in the case of Nixon, he was so awful that, yes, although it was first pursued by the Democratic majority in the House, eventually Republicans had to take that long walk to the White House and say, Dick, you're a dick. You gotta go.
Right. I mean, they wanted to make sure that there was bipartisan agreement for that. You know, that's the only I mean, the Democrats had super majorities. They could have just rammed it through and kicked Nixon out of office. But, you know, there were statesmen back then, you know, and I really see a hell of a lack of statesmanship here, except, dare I say, you know, as to John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And I'm not a fan of those guys by any stretch of the imagination. But I think both of those guys know that this whole Trump administration is just so corrupt to the bone because they've seen the intelligence stuff. And they know about the history of, you know, Manafort and Roger Stone and those guys. And, you know, they don't want to go down with the ship, essentially, you know?
Well, yeah, but by the same token, I remain skeptical of John and Marsha. I mean, John and Lindsay. because all they ever do is talk at best. They never actually do anything.
Yeah, that's true.
They're like flamethrowers or bombers or something.
But they
want to jump into the conversation.
But the thing is, their flamethrower is a Bic lighter. It never burns anything but their own little thumbs.
That's run out of butane, or it's got only one more, you know, one more light left, right?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
But if just once, Precious Lindsay would vote like he had a conscience instead of just talking about it, or McCain would do the same.
Right.
It might restore a little bit of my faith, but you know, just this week to sit there and listen to Lindsay talk about the precious, darling little fetuses. It was an exercise in sick.
Another thing that comes to mind, Bob, is that during one of the confirmation hearings for one of Trump's cabinet appointees, I don't know if it was Sessions or not, but the way Marco Rubio was going after him, it seemed like he was like no way he was going to vote no on the guy or vote yes on the guy. And he ended up voting yes anyway. Was that Sessions?
I
forget who the hell it was, but it was one of the deplorables in the cabinet now. And, you know, it was all talk and no action. Again, when it came time to a vote, you know, he was a yes man, you know. I mean, I think what's going to have to happen, Bob, for something to occur with regard to the Trump, you know, to getting, you know, either criminal charges filed against him or impeachment or something, is you're going to have like some, literally a smoking gun almost released, like some kind of a tape something like that.
And Rick, that may not be enough because the dynamic is so different. Can you imagine if the anti-Vietnam War left in 1973 with the steady flow of information coming out about just how crooked and how criminal Nixon was? Can you imagine if the anti-war Vietnam left would have written of Jack Anderson, "He's a corporatist scumbag. Everybody knows this is just an attempt to discredit Richard Nixon and the damn Democrats who are doing it. All they ever do is take money from corporate lobbyists." It's like they've got some sort of attention deficit disorder.
Well, I think you're right.
Can you imagine if the Watergate hearings had been referred to as McCarthyite? Because the Sparkle Ponies are doing that.
Well, I think the Sparkle Ponies overestimate their importance. They're only maybe a 2 or 3% of the population, if that. Maybe not even that, Bob. Maybe 1%. You know, they're like totally fringe. They're like somewhere between, you know, Mars and Jupiter, as far as I'm concerned. They're in the asteroid belt. or maybe even the Kuiper Belt further out, you know?
Yeah, sorry, I'm communicating with Ben Birch. He was telling me.
Oh, okay, good. I was afraid we had a problem.
No, we're back. In it. He said, sounds like just internet weather.
So while I got the mic here, Bob, I was going to comment that in addition to the world's greatest healthcare act of 2017 failing today, being a big disappointment for me, of course, but my real disappointment is that I just found out that due to severe bronchitis, Eric Clapton is canceling this weekend shows at the Forum in L.A., and he's going to reschedule them for my concert, which was on Saturday, has been rescheduled for a Wednesday in September, which really is a crappy night.
Oh, that's going to be when you're busy being billable.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to try to – he does have a couple of shows on the weekend, like September 15th and 16th, Friday and Saturday. So I'm going to try to schedule it for the 16th if I can trade my ticket for, you know, from the 25th of March to September 16th on a Saturday, because, you know, Wednesday is a really sucky night to go to a concert, you know. I've skipped concerts just for that reason, you know. Even Friday is kind of tricky because you got to deal with L.A. traffic, too. I mean, you know.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, you can Yeah. You can zip off of the 6 7/8 onto the 9 12/16, 9 13/16, and then suddenly you're just parked.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess woe is me. I mean, I shouldn't complain because, you know, I mean, I got to see.
Yeah, Rick the, World. Yeah, we'll file this under Rick World problems.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I mean, I got to. I see so many good concerts anyway. I've seen Sting. I've seen. What was that? Don't Fear the Reaper, Blue Oyster Cult a couple of weekends ago. They're still rocking.
Did they bring the cowbell?
Oh, yeah. They had the cowbell going. Yeah.
Gotta have the cowbell.
Gotta have the cowbell, man. But I did get tickets. There's a festival. I don't know if I told you this. Tom Petty is playing on, at a festival. It's called the Arroyo Seco Festival. They have, like, you know, three stages. They're going to have, like, gourmet food trucks and so forth and chefs and
food
what
trucks.
Have you. So he's playing. Who else is playing? Who's that old British blues man who's, like, got to be 80 by now? John
Mayall?
John Mayall.
Yeah, he's playing. He's playing. And a bunch of other bands. So I'm looking forward to that. I've never seen Petty or Mayall. So... it should be fun. It should be fun. That's just in Pasadena. So
see, you say gourmet food trucks, and I think, well, gee, I wonder if there's somewhere I could get a little cup of crummy yogurt or something.
Oh God!
Yeah, it feels like my days as a gourmand and an epicure are suspended at the very least.
They have gourmet food trucks in L.A.?
Oh hell yeah! Oh yeah!
Oh, I don't know if they only had taco trucks.
Oh no, it's become quite the deal. You know, at a lot of these concerts, they have like free concerts in downtown LA in the summertime in Pershing Square, and they have a bunch of food trucks for that. And you know, I'm sure there's going to be tons of food trucks. But getting back to you, Bob, is there any way you can get your ass up to the Cleveland Clinic? Because it sounds like you really need to, man.
I'd be there tomorrow if there was some way to do it.
Is that not covered by your, do you have Obamacare right now?
Well, I got nothing right now. That's the problem.
Oh, shit. Okay.
You fell out of Medicaid because of money?
I fell out of it because of a goddamn computer glitch.
Oh. Whoa.
You know, they send you this thing. They say you got to do your annual review. And see, that's another thing. If we had Medicare for all, there would be no annual review. It's like, are you still alive? Are you still an American? Good. You know, you're still covered. So
yeah.
I went online. I filled out my annual review at their website. Clicked, you know, same. And then it said submit. And I clicked submit. And a couple of weeks later, I got a note saying your coverage has been canceled because you did not finish an annual review.
Ugh. So what's the process for getting reinstated? Have you missed the sign-up period?
Because I got to fill out a whole new application.
Oh, jeez.
And sit around and wait for that shit. But it gets but it gets worse, because one of the problems with Medicaid is that it is administered on the state level and not the federal.
Oh.
And so they treat it, you know, they farm out the administration to some guy who gets, you know, a gold-plated toilet as a Christmas bonus at the end of the year. And they approve and deny coverage, approve and deny coverage. I mean, just getting an MRI is like pulling teeth. I mean, in order for me to get an MRI, the MRI that finally showed that all the three ruined discs in my neck, I had to go to 6 weeks of physical therapy and let them yank around on my beat up sore ass neck, so that the next day I would feel like I'd been in a bar fight. And then I had to get an X-ray. And only after that was I allowed to have an MRI, which turned out to be the dispositive diagnostic tool.
Right.
Now, they wasted a ton of money on the goddamn therapy when they could have just jumped straight to the X-ray.
Yeah.
So, as far as going to Cleveland or Mayo Clinic or anywhere else is concerned, Medicaid wouldn't let me leave West Virginia, even though there's nobody in West Virginia who can be counted on to competently do this surgery.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
And you know, meanwhile, you look up the stats, Mayo Clinic has 174 physicians in this specialty. Cleveland Clinic has 74 physicians in this specialty.
Now, is this gastroenterologist?
Yeah, this is gastroenterology.
Okay.
It's not oncology and it's not endocrinology, although that may be, you know, that may be something that comes along later.
Bob, let me ask you this here. Maybe I could ask my friend Laura, who's a doctor. She's the she's a cancer specialist, but she's a urologist. She was a surgeon, and now she's doing basically hospital administration. Maybe she has some contacts in Mayo or Cleveland Clinic. You want me to check with her?
Couldn't hurt.
Okay. And what is the name of your condition, just so I can relay that to her?
There isn't one. I mean, let's see. Pseudocyst on tail of pancreas and spleen. Along with metabolic syndrome and the birth defect that has my entire digestive system on the right side of my abdomen laying over against my liver.
Mm.
I mean, it's kind of a pain. It's pain.
So you essentially need intestinal reconstructive surgery, I suppose.
No, it's not reconstructive. It's
or
it's a question. It's a question of not knowing. The surgery is enough of a challenge by itself. Anytime you're removing organs, you know.
Right.
And anytime you're taking a hunk off the pancreas, you know, or taking the whole pancreas, I mean, that has some pretty significant ramifications insofar as, you know, I'm not insulin dependent right now, but I damn sure would be after that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would be if they just take the tail of the pancreas where the trouble appears to be.
Okay. But separate from the birth defect, though, that problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it all contributes into sort of a perfect storm of, you know, yuck.
Yeah. Because, I mean.
But, yeah, I mean, basically what happened is while my mother was wandering around with me in her womb during the Cuban Missile Crisis,
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's just when it happened.
I was a missile crisis baby. I was born on the height of it, the very day, October 28th, 62.
Oh, see, I was still baking.
Mm-hmm.
But one's innards, you know, just like the baby is in a placenta, one's innards form in a sac, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the sac eventually lets loose, and the innards sort of spread out in the typical fashion around the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mine never did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it happens to about one person in a million. One people, jeez. But, wow. But you know, I get a little uncomfortable talking about this because it makes me feel like I'm, you know, just, oh, me. That's not my point.
Well, you're special, Bob. Just think of it that way.
Yeah.
In a way that you don't want to be special, unfortunately. You know?
Yeah.
I don't want to tell Medicare stories or get a shut up, Sparky.
Well, let me see what I can do, Bob. Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, in my case, it's just annoying as hell because I've got all this weight loss, and I can't eat much of anything, and so that takes my ability to, you know, have the requisite energy for any given day down.
Yeah.
And the pain is constant. And, you know, one of the other things that plays into this, not that I'm out there looking to have my addiction experience or anything, but they will not, absolutely will not, prescribe pain relief for this. Well, if you're taking ibuprofen, that's enough for you, hillbilly. You can't get hooked on ibuprofen and sell it to the boys down under the bridge or anything like that, so...
That's only going to aggravate stomach issues, ibuprofen.
Well,
would CDB?
I'm not going to stick them up my ass, Steve.
I understand that, Bob. But yeah, there's a book out called "The Body with Two Brains." The stomach and the brain are made up of the same organic material.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I've read articles about it.
They both have the same serotonin and opiate receptors.
Huh.
You know, in the stomach and in the brain. It's wild stuff, you know. We just want you to get better, Bob.
Hey, Bob, would CDB possibly help relieve your pain or not? I know it's not legal in West Virginia, but...
Well, that's a starting place. It's also brutally expensive. But the thing is, it's hard for me to smoke.
Yeah.
Because it sends me into paroxysms of just gagging coughing.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, you ever got hold of a hit that was so strong that you wound up puking in a bucket?
Not quite that bad, no. But I've coughing my lungs out.
Yeah, where it feels like your eyeballs are going to go blowing out the front of your face.
Oh God.
Oh yeah, I've actually strained my back muscle coughing so hard.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So are you still smoking then, Bob, or have you given that up?
No, it's that I'm down to one vice.
Okay. Yeah. Jeez.
Well, I quit beating that drum. Me and Bob had a discussion and I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean I'm not susceptible to I'd love to, but to the extent that you guys like to have me on the air for 3 hours a night. I mean, I could, but it involves like going out into the desert with a loincloth and a knife and a wiki up and just screaming for 6 weeks.
And the way you explained it to me is that they're not interconnected, smoking in your stomach, in your condition.
Oh, no, I mean, no, the doctor's always going, well, you know, one of the leading causes of pancreatic cancer is smoking.
Of course.
But... I mean, that's the one good news out of it. It ain't pancreatic cancer. I mean, because if it was, it'd just be cancel Christmas and, you know, the farewell. Hope you all have a happy life. Or at least that's the way I've always understood it.
Snork sent you a very nice note, Bob. You might want to ask him about it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not following the chat here.
I had a conversation with a plant physiologist about substituting kudzu stems for CBD. Kudzu might be legal there.
God knows it's legal. Shit. It's legal all over the South.
Shit, it's everywhere here. Can't get away from it.
It's not a hallucinogenic or anything recreational, but
The Japanese eat the root of it as a staple vegetable.
Yeah, they referred to it. The plant physiologist referred to it as the potato. That was his translation. It's a great big spud that grows about 3 feet underground underneath it.
And apparently it's tasty.
I haven't tried it, but the chemical in it, I do know cows won't go near it. It's a cow repellent. And I just thought, hey, nothing else works. Try chewing on some kudzu.
You know, there's some here, but not a whole lot. It apparently doesn't like the climate until the climate warms up here. You talk about things that animals avoid. The farmers and the old timers and stuff tell me that wilted wild cherry leaves will kill a cow dead. I mean, no time flat. And horses that eat purple-topped ironweed become horses that are pining for the fjords.
Up here, if you tie a gardener snake skin to your boots, rattlesnakes won't strike at you.
Tie a what?
A gardener snake skin.
Oh, wow.
Rattlesnakes are afraid of gardener snakes.
Bob, do you mind if I jump in here for a minute?
No, not at all.
About this, the ACA, don't think they're done with this thing, man. They haven't thrown in the towel, no matter how much they indicated that they've done some. I have a theory that they're going to utilize Tom Price and his position to cut this thing like a fish so they can come back a year from now when everything has went all to hell in a handbasket and say, see, we tried, so...
Oh, they're going to destroy it from within, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, this was just round one.
Yeah.
But you know, they learned. I mean, they learned some lessons from the Obama administration. When the Congress wouldn't let Obama do anything, he started acting through the administrative state, which, of course, Steve Racist Bannon wants to dismantle, but not until he's gotten some of the things done that he wants to do. And yeah, Tom Price has things that he can do to the Affordable Care Act, and none of us can do a goddamn thing about it.
And he'll do it very subtly and very slowly to where you won't notice it until it's too late. It's the way these bastards work, man.
Well, you know, my understanding is that because the Affordable Care Act was so complicated that there was a whole lot of discretion. There's like a number of, I don't know, like hundreds of areas in the law where it gives the secretary, which is the secretary of Health and Human Services, discretion to do certain things. And that's where, you know, that's where he would, basically decide to deregulate. I mean, it's been said that the power to regulate is also the power to destroy. I would flip that on its head and say that the power not to regulate is also the power to destroy, or at least it can be, with regard to a very intricate statute that depends on the good faith of administrators to actually try to administer the law instead of to destroy the damn thing. It's going to be vitally important for public interest organizations, for regular citizens to be very vigilant as to what those possible areas are that Price can try and undermine the ACA, and file lawsuits and protest and for whatever that's worth, to try to make him do his job essentially. And I'm hoping that this insider trading investigation of him bears fruit as well. Maybe get his ass, force him to resign.
Yeah, but who's
like going to
do the investigating? Come on, Rick.
And it didn't do a damn thing for Nathan Deal. Hell, we elected him governor.
Oh.
So, I mean.
Yeah, he was a big insider. Yeah, well, I guess the state of Georgia is very corrupt, isn't it?
From its core. Yeah, from its core. And the people don't care. I've even had people tell me, hell, that's what you want. You want somebody that can beat them from the inside out. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, man.
Well, I mean, the thing is, Illinois at least prosecutes its governors who are crooks, you know. You'd think that the state of Georgia would want to, you know, try to, you know, prosecute people, but I guess not. I mean, obviously, they're in full-on cover-up mode, as I said earlier. The whole, the whole rotten administration, you know, this is like...
Oh, it's this Russian thing? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He even tried to get a congressman to give him cover. Saying, well, I let him in on inside information, and Trump come back and said, oh, no, I feel vindicated. Bullshit. Trump is privy to anything that a congressman is privy to. So that, as we say here in the South, that dog don't hunt, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's for sure. To sum up, it is certainly is round one, unfortunately, with regard to the Affordable Care Act and, you know, we can't spike the ball in the end zone. You know, we got to keep fighting, just like with anything with this wretched administration and the wretched Congress we have, you know.
And this is a horrible transition, but Bob, have you heard that Sean Hannity pulled a gun on Juan Williams?
Yeah, I did hear about that. That's
and he beat it down on him. Could you imagine if that situation was reversed? And Juan pulled the gun on Sean.
Yeah, Juan Williams be all dead.
Yeah, or in jail. I mean, the hypocrisy we got going on here is just staggering. Just staggering. It blows your mind, man.
Oh, if I were Juan Williams, I wouldn't be hanging around Fox any longer.
No, I'd get the hell out of there. And of course, Hannity says, oh, I was just showing my good friend Juan Williams the safety of firearms. What? You're drawing down on him? You know, I've always been taught that the unloaded
gun will kill you a lot
faster than the loaded one, you know.
There's just a few too many stories out there, Steve, that include the quote, the gun just went off.
Yeah.
And I just feel terrible about shooting old Juan Williams there. I mean, he's a good old boy.
I didn't mean, and with Combs now, I mean, who else do they have even remotely left other than Juan? Maybe Kirsten Powers, but I don't even see her on there anymore.
No, I mean, it's to the point where Shepard Smith is the resident liberal now.
Yep.
And he's not a liberal.
And they always trot him out to report all the bad news, you know. As far as I'm trying to think of when they last trotted him out. When they said the Judge Napolitano and had made some kind of statement, they had to trot Shepard out to say, we have to retract that because it's not true. And then Judge Napolitano or Judge No Forehead got fired, you know.
Well, I think he just kind of got disappeared for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you think he'll be
just
back?
He's just indefinitely suspended, whatever the hell that means. When Randy Rhodes got indefinitely suspended, it meant fired, essentially. So,
yeah,
I think Napolitano is gone. You know, if you say you're suspended for a month, then that's something. Okay, you're probably not gone, but you're just in the doghouse. But indefinite, that's definitely not good. You know.
And it all ties back to where they're trying to give Trump cover for this Russian thing. And there's a rumor out now that somebody over in Europe has got this tape that the notorious, I don't know how to even say it. I'll just put it.
The pee-pee tape?
The pee-pee tape, yeah. And he's just waiting to sell it to the highest bidder.
Well,
I don't think it'll matter. Do you, Bob?
Not to the Trumpansies.
No. I don't think
it's kind of like the analysis we used on the impeachment portion of the Constitution. There's nothing in the impeachment portion of the Constitution that says you can remove a president for being knuckin' futz. There's also nothing there that says you can impeach him for getting pee-peed on or paying women to pee-pee on a bed before he became president.
Yeah, because he had such a hatred for Bill Clinton that he wanted to see his bed peed on, you know.
No, Obama.
Obama, excuse me.
Yeah, I want to see you pee. I want to see you pee right where that Michelle's head laid. Yeah, pee real good right there. Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting.
I mean, I think the standard is so low with that whole Access Hollywood tape, you know, the pussy grabbing and all that thing. I mean, it's been lowered so much that, I mean, the guy would almost have to be photographed, you know, executing somebody point blank with a handgun to get in trouble. I mean, I don't know. Am I wrong?
No.
But I must admit, I think I would be remiss if I did not point out that the angry rednecks are getting creative. You've seen this horrifying, sickening, pathetic story out of New York, I presume, about the young white Army veteran who walked up to a black man, 66 years old, who was bent over collecting cans out of the trash, and ran him through with a sword.
Jesus. Say what?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, murdered him with a sword.
What who the hell carries this sword around?
A crazy white man who's hell-bent on killing black people.
Yeah, James Harris Jackson, described by the New York Times as a morose and seemingly directionless 28-year-old white man who lived in Baltimore and had been having trouble getting rooted since leaving the Army. In giving a statement to police, he said, since he was a boy, he has hated black men, a bitter hatred of black men that boiled in his mind and consumed him. And then last week, he left Baltimore for New York and decided to start killing black men.
Now, my question, Bob, is what, they don't have black people in Baltimore? He had to go all the way to New York to find him a black person to kill?
That's troubling because, no, there's black folks in Maryland.
Yeah.
We got black folks here.
Well, that meant he had to go all the way across the country.
You'll be interested to note that even though he traveled from Baltimore to New York City with the intent of murdering a black man, pay attention, Billable Rick. There's going to be some lawyery stuff involved here.
Okay.
They only charged him with second-degree murder as a hate crime. Not first-degree premeditated murder.
What the fuck? This is New York State?
New York City.
New York City.
Jesus Christ.
Prosecutor Joan Eluzzi said Mr. Jackson was particularly offended by black men who were with white women. She
what
also told that...
What about black women that are with white women, Bob?
They didn't get into that. She told the judge that additional charges may be filed, including murder in the first degree, quote, as this is an act most likely of terrorism. Now, no offense, it is terrorism. It's typical, predictable, white, right-wing, domestic terrorism. But whatever happened to plain old-fashioned garden variety first-degree premeditated murder?
He already said what his attempt was, right, Rick?
What's that? Yeah. It depends on the intent. I mean, basically, if it's second-degree murder, that's sort of, malignant heart murder, where let's say you fire into a crowded movie theater or, you know, fire into a house and you hit somebody and... You know, basically, you're acting with disregard for the lives of whoever it is, you know, might be in the line of fire. But this is clearly intentional. The guy, picked out this man just because, you know, he was black and rammed a sword through him. I mean, Jesus Christ. This is like crazy. Did he?
Yeah,
think
and as being pointed out in the chat room, he apparently selected New York because he wanted lots of media coverage because he originally planned to kill a lot more than one black man.
Jeez. Did he think he was like on a set for The Walking Dead or something, or what the fuck?
No, he's being described as a. As a discontent, because they don't have any data to link him to any white supremacy or hate groups. He told the cops, "I've hated black men since I was a kid. I've had these feelings since I was a young person. I hate black men." Now, his lawyer, who is ironically named Sam Talkin.
Not Sambo?
No, Sam Talkin. He's a member of the firm Walkin', Talkin', and Sittin' Around.
Oh, God.
Sam Talkin said, we just need for the dust to settle. If the information put forth by the authorities is accurate, they'll have to deal with Mr. Jackson's obvious psychological issues. Because naturally, when a millennial white guy, army veteran, decides to run a black guy through with a sword for nothing more than being a black guy, he's got obvious psychological issues there.
Yeah.
But it's a sickening story. Oh, and by the way, when they did catch him, they asked him why he did it, and he said, "I've written everything down. I was going to deliver everything I wrote to the New York Times. Listen, I wrote it all down. It's in my laptop." Now, here's the wrinkle. He is a 2007 high school graduate from, and if Todd in South Carolina Stan is listening, he's going to have a conniption. He is a 2007 graduate of the Friends School of Baltimore, a small and prestigious Quaker day school.
Oh, jeez.
Forgive me, but that immediately made me think of this. You can hate me if need be.
I am a pacifist by nature, with a deep Quaker belief in the sanctity of human life. I wish I had a choice but to kill you.
Jeez.
And let's remember, Richard Nixon was a Quaker.
Yeah, right. What was that clip from, Bob?
That's from the original version of The In-Laws.
Oh, okay. I never saw that one.
Oh! If you've never seen it, that's perfect for this weekend.
Was that like with Walter Matthau or one of those?
No. That's Alan Arkin and Peter Falk.
Okay. Maybe I have seen that. I don't know.
You don't remember the famous zigzag scene?
Serpentine Sheldon.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've seen it. I'll have to check it out.
You will laugh uproariously. You will. So apparently the teachings there of the Society of Friends were not able to overcome maybe what he saw in Iraq, where he learned that all dark skinned people are potential killers. Thanks, George. Thank you, Mr. Bush.
Yeah. Geez.
But it gets weirder. Okay, so here's this guy. He joins the Army in 2009, and he's deployed to Afghanistan from December 2010 to November 2011. He's stationed in Baumholder, Germany, discharged in August in 2012, He never achieved the rank of anything more than specialist. Got several awards while he was in the Army. And worked in... Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? MOS? Anybody?
Transportation.
Military intelligence.
Oh.
Yeah. And when you see the... if you go to the New York Times and look for the picture... And you see the photograph taken of him at his arraignment in court. Jesus, he does. He looks like a young Nazi just waiting for the spiffy black suit. Oh, okay. Wait. I'm being told. Hold it right there, Bob. Specialist is like a full bird corporal. Okay, so he rose to the rank of specialist.
Is that like E4 or something?
I got no idea. I'm relying on I'm relying on Larry in the chat room for this.
So he was in Iraq from what, 2000? Was it 2007 to 2011? You said
no.
Bob?
He was in Iraq from he was in Afghanistan from 2010 to 2011.
Oh, okay, 10 to 11. Okay.
Yeah, and Larry says yeah, E4.
Yeah, you got to remember, Bob, I was in the Air Force.
Right.
We're different.
No, I mean, you've never run anybody through with a sword, so I'll say there's lots of people that are different.
No. I just carried around a 50-pound toolbox and worked on airplanes.
And Kitty just wrote in. And she said, adding even more outrage to this horrible story is the fact that the New York Post referred to the white supremacist killer as well-dressed while detailing the victim's criminal past. Fucking disgusting. Thanks, Kitty, in Boston. Yeah, all too typical. All too typical. Let's see. It's about 3 minutes past eight. Thank you very kindly to Steve and Miss Karen and sweet little Cletus. She's a good puppy. And sweet little Twiggy. She's a good puppy, too. For taking down the fundraising goal for the evening. $20 challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve and Karen and Cletus and Twiggy. And if that is met, we will go down to only $180 to go in fundraising to finish the week. Even minus the penalty I imposed on myself for last night. So $20 challenge on the table, and that'll then leave 18 at 10, 10 or 10 at 18, 1 at 1, 82 at 90, 4 at 45, 8 at 22.50. I got to keep ciphering. Got to keep ciphering. Yeah. So,
hey, Bob.
Thanks for the challenge there. Steve, yeah.
Did you bring Larry into the conversation since you bypassed him last week? He never got in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Without a doubt. Hey, Larry.
Hopefully he's listening. He didn't fall asleep.
I just get used to people, you know, jumping in and chiming in when the mood strikes them. Sometimes.
Hold on.
Ah, there he is.
Hold on. There I am. Hi there, folks.
Hey, Larry.
Right now we're looking at my eardrops, trying to figure out what's going on with my ear. I've had an ear infection, so we're trying to take care of that. How are you? How is everybody?
Muddling along. Still... How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Rick was asking about whether or not there's going to be an event for my mother. It's going to be in 2 weeks. Yeah, I may not be able to get down there because I'm worrying. I'm trying to take care of my ear and I've also got a dental appointment. But other than that, you know, and I'm following sort of tangentially what's going on politically, and we're wondering whether or not the ACA might have not passed because the more extreme members of the already extreme, you know, already extremist Republican Party didn't like it because it didn't go far enough, and that's why it didn't pass. But I'm.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, Larry. The Freedom Caucus said, "Oh hell no," because it wasn't sadistic enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now I'm trying to deal with my health issues, and you know, I'd like to be able to go down to L.A. for my mother's for the celebration for my mother, who, as you know, passed away on the 28th of February. But I may just have to content myself with perhaps using the phone, using FaceTime on the phone, and being a part of it that way. As you know, my mother passed away from pancreatic cancer. You were talking about pancreatic cancer just a few minutes ago. And Bob, I hope you get some expert medical help for whatever your issue is with your stomach. That doesn't sound so good, you know, hearing that you're not doing well. I'm just trying to hang in here. You know, I'm mostly worried about my ear. You know, my hearing is important. And I've got a little hearing loss because of it. So if anybody has any information or can help or can get me in touch with Bob Lotti, who knows an awful lot about this stuff, I'd appreciate it. I really would. Maybe Snort can chime in. I don't know.
I don't really know any ear specialists.
Okay. All right. But other than that, you know, I'm keeping on. And I'm surprised that I'm not more broken up about losing my mom. I mean, my brother and sister. My sister's going through hell trying to arrange everything and trying to keep it together. And my brother apparently is not doing that well right now. But we're doing the best we can. That's all I can say. How are you doing, Tracy? I haven't talked with you for a while. Oh, I guess everybody left.
No, we're all here.
Okay.
Sometimes it just takes a little
while. Yeah, Tracy, maybe she's on the 6 7/8 or whatever. Who knows?
Yeah.
Hey, Larry, can you go to your regular doctor and get referred to an ear specialist?
Well, I have been seeing an ear specialist, actually.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, hi, Tracy.
Hi. No, yeah. I didn't realize the microphone was on mute. No, I had to. My shoulder's been killing me. I had to go get 2 shots of cortisone. That was fun. And I'm sorry to hear about your mom. I hope you can make it down for the services. Good news is that I'm losing weight, back in school. Mm-hmm. My anxiety level has dipped some because now I'm not knowing, I'm not losing my health care. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that I was hoping for the vote so I could see which bastards voted for the American Health Care Act or whatever the fuck this thing was called. Mm-hmm. So I could make a mental note in my, I had pen and paper in hand ready to write down the yay votes, the name, you know. And so I was just really hoping to know which ones were going to vote so I can make sure I, you know, contacted my friends in each and every one of those states to say, you rat bastards, I hope you burn in hell, and make sure that, you know, there's somebody that's running against your ass.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad we got a reprieve for now.
In order to answer Duncan's question, yeah, I am seeing an ENT. I was diagnosed with, first they thought it was external otitis or swimmer's ear. That's what the PA said. Then I got some medicine for eustachian tube disorder. Then I was diagnosed with a middle ear infection. And then I actually went to an ENT and got diagnosed with swimmer's ear, which is otitis externa. And they keep on, and he's seeing me every week. So I'm taking these drops, you know, putting these drops in my ear. So, and I'm getting some pulsile tinnitus and stuff in my right ear. So I'm concerned about it. I mean, it's, I get obsessive anyway, but this is a new obsessive thing that I'm obsessed about. But I am seeing an ENT.
Well, you get tinnitus in your ear just because of older age.
Okay.
And and wearing headphones for years and years and years. I can testify to that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, all I can say is that if I do get down to L.A., Rick has already asked me. He already asked me if my family made arrangements, and what they're doing is they're having a 5-hour get together on a Saturday, 2 weeks from today, in a wine shop and bar in Santa Monica, and whoever my sister can get a hold of through email, we're going to invite, so everything is being done by computer and by Evite. So if my sister doesn't remember you or you don't have email, you don't know it's kind of upsetting to me, to be honest. I kind of would like to be able to do the whole thing with the letters and stuff, but, you know, and invite as many people as possible. But
it's kind of an unusual place to have a ceremony, Larry, but I guess, point Rick, is getting family together anyway. That's the important point.
Rick got in touch with me and asked me if there was going to be a little get-together, and because he was hoping that you and Rick and I could get together and meet each other in person. We could actually do that by using FaceTime, but he was hoping we could all get together, and I was hoping that much, and I was hoping to invite Timmy. Even though I haven't talked with him in 2 months, I was hoping to invite Timmy so we could all get together and see each other face to face. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
He's been MIA lately.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. I've seen a couple of comments.
I do see him on Facebook.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of comments on Facebook here and there, and I've been looking forward to talking to him because I'm reading a classic of Japanese literature of 20th century Japanese literature right now.
Great tell.
It's called Spring Snow, Volume 1 in the Sea of Fertility series by... I'll have it in a minute. If I can type.
Thank God for the Google machine. It helps us with our memories, huh, Bob?
Well, all I'd actually have to do is open Kindle, but I'm too dippy for that. Yukio Mishima.
Ah.
Who is famous for having tried to stage a coup in Japan in 1970 and had a really botched, messed up attempt at seppuku. I mean, Hemingway just put two barrels of a shotgun against his forehead and squeezed the trigger with his toes. This guy took over an office, yelled out a manifesto, and then went back inside and played with his own innards.
Mm. So he survived the attempt?
Oh, no. His second botched... The way it works is, after you've done that, your second is supposed to... with a very clean sword stroke, take off your noggin. Only he wound up, I guess they hadn't put much of an edge on the sword. Why am I laughing? No. And he kind of stood there hacking away for a little bit when the third guy came along and finished the job. And then the second guy who had botched the job was then ritually required to seppuku himself. And the third guy finished the job for him, too. It was a messy day.
This sounds like a Quentin Tarantino movie, that scene, Bob.
But he writes beautifully. And he writes about a time period in Japanese history that is quite compelling, because the book is set in 1914, 8 years after the close of the Russo-Japanese War. And the opening of the First World War in Europe, and the rise of the militarized cult that would go on to wreak such havoc on the Chinese mainland and wind up, well, December 7th, et cetera, et cetera. But it's
how old was he when he killed himself, or when somebody else, he had somebody else kill him?
He was 45 years old.
Oh, geez. All right.
And he'd been a poet and a novelist and a playwright, and he was into Japanese nationalist politics and wanted the return of the sort of militant nationalism that, yeah. But he wrote beautifully. So I'm plodding through that. In fact, it was published. It was published just a year before he offed himself.
That's something that Mr. Stress would have loved to read, I'm sure, Bob.
Oh, I'll bet he would have. I'll absolutely. Of course, yeah. Bill was more into actual history than he was fiction, and this is fiction, but it still has overtones of you know, historic fact. You were saying, Sparky?
I got an update from Tim, a message from Facebook.
Oh, yeah?
He's in class right now. He's having a midterm.
Ah.
So that's one of the other reasons he doesn't be around this time of day. I mean, he goes to school at certain times. Still.
Well, hello, Tim, for what it's worth.
He's listening. He's listening on his phone.
Okay. Hey, Tim. Don't be a stranger.
Did I tell you guys my good news? Because I live in California, good news. So because I live in California, the Department of Rehabilitation is not only going to pay for me to finish my bachelor's, but they're going to pay for me to get my master's as well.
That's beautiful.
Wow.
Because, you know, California.
Out of control.
Tracy and Rick, you think universal health care is going to pass in California?
It's going to if the feds fuck up the ACA, which they very well could do.
Well, wasn't Jerry Brown talking shit about it the other day?
He's only got another year in office, a year and a half in office.
The next
governor is going to be Gavin Newsom. That's the guy who you want to find out what his position is on single payer, you know, universal health care in California.
I forget who it was.
Yeah, Jerry Brown's too much of a tightwad. Yeah.
I forget who it was, but I saw somebody float the idea, and it struck me as almost, wow, maybe could work. The idea of blue states, California, Oregon, Washington, New York, etc.
Massachusetts.
Not necessarily Massachusetts, because they've already got a working system. But banding together with a sufficient population base to do their own universal single payer via, some sort of interstate compact. And then telling the Confederacy to, you know, that would be the phrase, yes.
And it would be called something like Blue Care, I've heard.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was called. Who was that, Rick?
Was that Randy Rhodes that was talking about that? Maybe it came up in her show or one of the other shows I listened to.
I don't think it was Randy's idea, because that was not that I would have remembered if that was the name associated with it.
Yeah, no, I don't think that was her idea. Maybe it was a caller to her show, or maybe even Norman's show. I'm not exactly sure. But that is a hell of an idea. I mean, it would basically, you know, the contrast would be palpable, you know, between the, you know, the healthcare in the blue states versus the red states. And, you know, it could start a groundswell as long as it works well in the other states, in the blue states, you know. You could even have a couple of different, you could have a West Coast version of it and you could have an East Coast version of it, just because geographically it would be maybe a little difficult to have, you know, the same plan in, on the East Coast and the West Coast, or maybe it wouldn't matter now. these days, you know?
It shouldn't matter.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't matter at this point, yeah. So,
you've got
yeah,
the cloud, I mean, after all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those, you know, the same states that have the Interstate Compact to reduce the carbon footprint, you know, which is includes the West Coast and the East Coast, could do that for healthcare, except, of course, Massachusetts has theirs, or maybe they'll want to go for, you know, for the Blue Care plan as well, you know? And, I mean, just think about it. Let's say that you have, you know, you have universal healthcare in California, and let's say people in California who pay for prescription medications are getting it for, let's say, I don't know, a fifth of the price that people in the red states pay for it. You're going to have some pretty awfully upset Confederates there, you know,
mm-hmm.
after a while.
Yeah, sorry, you babies.
Know, they're going to, yeah, yeah, and they're going to start demanding that they get the same rates. So maybe that could push the country to
wait
to do a national single payer.
And then we can have immigration laws here in California that people from red states can't come move here.
I think we need to build a wall around our eastern border.
Except for Bob. We'll let Bob in. We'll let Bob in.
And Agnes. And Margie and Ferg.
We'll
let Bob and Bob's extended family into California.
Look, we'll do extreme vetting.
And Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I mean, to a certain extent, California's already gone through that during the Dust Bowl, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people were excluded. People were excluded from California. You had local, you know, the whole Grapes of Wrath thing, if you ever saw that movie. They had local people that would basically prevent you from entering the state. You know?
Okies and the Arkies.
Yeah, I mean, what we need to do, I mean, I think Nevadans are okay, but I think we need to build a wall between California and Arizona. That's the problem right now, yes, until Arizona becomes normal.
We can't let those Arizonans in.
No, we got to wait till they become normal before we let them in.
Well, no, we can let the people from Flagstaff, Arizona. People from Flagstaff can come in.
Tucson's kind of blue.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix is becoming more blue, I think.
But and Flagstaff definitely, but the rest of that, yeah.
Yeah.
See, who would be in charge of the vetting, Bill Rick?
I'll take the lead in the vetting. We'll have it'll be like a purity test for people to enter California. Okay.
I'll
a progressive purity test.
I'll devise the tests that they have to complete in order to come in. Simple questions like, is climate change real?
Scott, can we list Punky's assistance in determining the vetting questions and so forth?
No, don't let Punky in on it. He doesn't like anybody. He barely likes me every other day.
He probably should be, never mind.
I
got news from the local front. We had an ice raid in my county the other day. I've come to find out today.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, little burg south of my town, Gerber, California, where a lot of the agricultural people that work around here live. So I didn't read the whole article. All I know is that the county sheriff was notified that they were in the area. And they even had a helicopter going.
I'm sorry, for what? For what, Sparky?
An ice raid.
Immigration raid.
They had a helicopter, you know, in case the Mexicans learned to fly.
Well, what's killing me is all these, you know, these crops that are going, you know, are rotting because, you know, people are scared and they're not coming to these, you know, because these white people aren't going to come and prick these crops.
Are they starting to rot in California, Tracy? Do you know?
No, I mean, I've seen it in Alabama and Texas.
Yeah. And
mostly
they're worried about it in the Central Valley. That's what I've heard.
Well, of course they are.
It'll serve those fuckers right. They voted for Trump, probably. All the people in the Central Valley, fuck them, you know? I mean, they're, you know, they're cut from the same cloth as Devin Nunes. You know, that's where he comes from, the Central Valley.
Fresno area.
Yeah, Tulare County, I think. Mm. Tulare County in Fresno.
And here's the problem.
Fuck them, you know?
Yeah, fuck them, but the problem is it's going to affect us. It's
I know.
It's because of higher food prices. We'll pay for it.
Well, you know, Tracy, there's always the South American option. We can import our fruits from South America, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we always have...
Yeah, I mean, from a climate change standpoint, it makes grapes from Chile on a fucking plane and fly them to L.A.
Well, yeah, we get them during off-season, Bob. It's amazing. Oh, yeah. All you have to do is go into Whole Paycheck and see them all over the place. I mean, Whole Foods.
Oh, I was over at Kroger the other day, and I picked up a bag of, and you know, I mean, it is what it is. Because I have to
grape.
I gotta have some little bit of sweet sitting around just in case my blood sugar goes to hell. And I figured rather than have like candy or something, I got myself a bag of seedless black grapes. Oh, they're candy. There's not a bit of tart to them. They're just so sweet. And it's real easy to abuse them.
There is another option. I planted my grapes last week.
Come here, girl.
Inside.
I'm sorry. Kimba's becoming very needy this afternoon.
I can just reach over the fence and pick grapes if I want to.
Whatever, Sparky.
I've got
shut it, Sparky.
My Mexican neighbor grows them. See, you have the grapes and oranges.
In March?
Yep.
No, not in March, but they're right next to my fence.
Okay, so if you were picking grapes and oranges in March, you really would. You'd get a shot at Sparky, okay? You would.
The oranges are already done. That was a couple months ago.
Trees out here. You have oranges too?
That was in November.
I don't have oranges.
Oh, hell yes. They got oranges all over the place up here.
Yeah, I don't have oranges yet. I have a lemon tree that's going to be 2 years before it produces. A banana tree, coffee, a whole bunch of other vegetables. And I have a grow area of 2 feet by 10 feet by 7 feet tall.
Mm. You know, the DEA is going to be real surprised when they come blowing through your door and find you growing bananas.
Probably the pineapple will be the most that you get them.
You need to send us your plans so we can start to build our own victory gardens, Snark. And maybe we can even learn how to make victory gin as well.
Did you say victory gin?
Yeah. Okay. I hate gin.
Well, Bob, I'm still trying to figure out a way to get around the fact that I can't bring a bottle from each island that I go to in December. I don't think that's fair.
How many islands are you going to?
Five.
Well, you need to take three more people with you. Or make friends with three AA members on the boat and have them bring it through.
Well, six islands if you including Puerto Rico.
Yeah, but Puerto Rico is America.
Right, but there's the Bacardi place is in Puerto Rico, isn't it?
Yeah, but still, I mean, there's a reason there's a bat on the label of that bottle.
Oh, shit.
Or throw the cap on the fire, bonfire, and just kill it.
I'm really perturbed about that. One fucking liter? That's ooh.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I mean, I don't travel that much. Okay, Kimba. Well, if you knew how to open the damn door, you can go out by yourself.
Grow a thumb, Kimba.
God.
You need to tie a sock on the. Is it a round doorknob?
Yes. Oh, that's right, huh? She could pull the door open herself. I can't believe she's going to be a year old next month.
Wow. We had a dog that knew how to open a latch screen porch. Used to drive people nuts in this house we lived in years ago. You could look through the window and see the screen porch outside, and the dog. But it was high enough so you couldn't see down low. Well, the door to open on one end and close, and then pretty soon the door opened on the other end and then close, and people go, who the hell is opening your doors? I said, it's the dog. Because they couldn't see the door handle. She reached up, put the handle down, put her paw on it, pulled the handle, and then put her other paw in between the door and the frame and fling it open.
Okay. Hey, Snark, hey. That's obscene.
I don't think I want to eat any of those Trump peppers, Snark.
Snark, wow. Oh, that's... Wow.
That's a genetic, just in case you can't see the picture, Bob, and it doesn't translate so well on radio, it's a red pepper that looks like a penis head on the end of it. It looks like it's
no,
been
I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it.
Oh, God.
I'm 29 minutes away from the eye bleach.
Oh, my God. I'm so angry at Snork right now. Thank you.
Oh, hey, by the way,
all weekend, Tracy.
Tracy, we were talking the other night about, you know, checking out Black Sails because there's some good lesbian action.
Ooh, hee hoo. Jan will be happy.
Well, I can add to that. It's kind of, you know, it's one of those things you only say in 2017, but this, the Spanish language series, and it's short, it's only like 7 or 8 episodes, called Juana Inés, that Agnes and I have been watching.
Is it a telenovela?
No, because it's about a historical figure in the 17th century.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I associate telenovela with, you know, hot, steamy men and women and, you know, a lot of screaming.
Yes, and big hair.
No, this is history.
Okay.
But there's some PG lesbianism in that too.
Oh shit! What station is that on?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, okay, cool.
Juana Ines.
Juana Ines. And.
As long as we're talking about Netflix, you know what else starts streaming again today? Season 3 of Frankie and Grace.
Oh, really?
The one
I've got Lily, to check that
Lily,
out.
Frankie and Grace is awesome.
Lily Tomlin and
Jane Fonda.
Jane Fonda.
Well, I'm really hoping that Outsiders gets a third season because. It seems to me like they got too many loose ends to wrap up in a short period of time.
Oh, they're going to have a third season, Bob. That show is kick ass. I haven't watched Underground yet, though. That's also on WGN.
Oh, geez, that is really good. Tracy, you been watching that?
Underground?
Yeah,
about the Underground Railroad.
I'm going to binge that too.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like
It is a kick ass show.
It's like the fourth episode, you know. Harriet Tubman is kick ass. The character in that Harriet Tubman character, she's kick ass.
Oh, they have Harriet Tubman on this season? Nice.
Yes.
Hey, what's going on with season 3 of House of Cards? Does anybody know when that's coming out? I assume they're going to have one.
I think in April.
Oh, it's coming up next month.
Oh, and something else is coming along pretty soon, too. I noticed this earlier today. A Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Isn't that coming on Hulu?
Yeah, which is a problem for me.
Orange is the New Black, and Better Call Saul is right around the corner, too. New seasons of those.
Oh, geez.
Oh, and the new season of Fargo starts up on FX.
Okay.
And Bob, I know you're personally boycotting Feud because of Susan Sarandon.
Yes.
However, I have to tell you, that show, especially.
Isn't it great?
It's awesome. It's awesome.
It's wonderful.
It's awesome. It is fucking awesome.
It's bitchy. It's campy. It's lovely. It's everything I've ever wanted.
It's delicious. They are acting their asses off. And just to see how it's dirty how the studio, how the, these men played these two women. And just, but just the fact that, I mean, because, I mean, I grew up watching who, you know, whatever happened to Baby Jane. And I could basically do the movie line by line. I've seen it that many times. But, I love the movie. And just to see the background of this, the people in the movie, and just, it wasn't just about Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, not realizing that Betty Davis's daughter was in the movie, and, you know, the whole character, Victor, you know, Victor Buono. Yeah.
Buono, B-U-O-N-O.
His character and how troubled, I mean, okay, like I said, Susan Sarandon is a see you next Tuesday, but you can put aside just for a little while and watch that show. Especially if you were ever a fan of that movie, you have to watch it just to watch what they did, just to watch the behind the
scenes. And you're right, Stacey, about the power players of the studio. Stanley Tucci played Jack
Stanley
Warner.
Tucci.
And Jack Warner was a son of a bitch.
Mm. He was, Stanley Tucci could play in a biopic of Marcel Marceau. And
right.
Still, and you know.
The poor guy who directs it, his real name was Bob Aldridge. And he had done a couple of fairly good movies over the years. But man, you got to figure his two stars were Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. Good God, that poor man had his head indeed.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I can't give him much sympathy because he played right into it, too. He did his own dirt, too.
Well, yeah, but another background character is the columnist, Hedda Hopper.
Oh, Hedda Harper? Oh, that
Oh, God.
Oh, what a, what a loathsome woman! You know, you go back to, what's the other biopic? Bryan Cranston.
Trumbo.
Trumbo. It becomes pretty obvious that Hedda Hopper was a horrible human being. And see, you have to understand. I mean, you referred Tracy to my personal boycott. It's not my personal boycott. It's our personal boycott.
Right.
Because we were watching something one evening, and the trailer ran for Feud, and Agnes said, "Isn't that Susan Sarandon?" and I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Fuck her."
I got it, Bob.
Agnes. Yes.
I mean, that's why Bill. That's
cowbell for that.
That's why. Okay. That's for Agnes. And that's why Belgian chocolate is still not allowed in this house. Because well, Bob, of that little that little Belgian bastard in the skinny jeans that ripped me off in Brussels.
Oh, jeez.
You know, Paulie Walnuts from The Sopranos is a total right-wing tool, but I wouldn't dismiss the whole series because of it.
Well, you know what? I got to be honest. Tracy, you got me into Justified.
See?
And then that right-wing piece of shit got me right out of it.
Wait, oh yeah, who was...
The guy who plays his boss.
Yes.
Well, you know something, Bob, and I wanted to chime in here, and I'm speaking off the top of my head more than anything else, but I'm kind of tired of having citizen legislators who are supposed to be making laws based upon issues or based upon, you know, various things that happen without having any real knowledge of the medicine or of the actual policy ramifications of what they're doing. I just don't like the idea of having some kind of white guy, some kind of white bread guy in a suit who's a lawyer or a public relations flack person just making a decision when they don't have the knowledge of what they're doing. As much as we say that we have a representative democracy made up of people of a wide variety of backgrounds, I don't know how you or Tracy or Rick or anybody else would respond to that, but I'm kind of tired of having these Bannon kind of people or having these legislators that don't know shit, and then they're making a determination about what a law is going to be or what policies are going to be followed. Does anybody have a response?
Well, Larry, in the case of the Republican Party, it is preferred that they not be able to think for themselves because they are not in Washington, D.C. to think for themselves. They are there to do what Alec tells them to do. They are there to do what Heritage tells them to do. They're there to do what Cato and the American Enterprise Institute and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the Sit Liberty Sit Foundation and what the ever tell them to do. And if they start thinking for themselves, well, then things don't work so good. The Freedom Caucus didn't come up with this notion of opposing the AHCA inside their little old punkin' heads. They are creatures. They're all. Here's our Star Trek reference. They're all Christopher Pike, just sitting there blinking red or blinking green, just beep. Beep,
the point that I'm making is when you have a bunch of legislators that are making making laws based upon medical policy or based upon medical determination or based upon anything to do with something that needs some expert knowledge, and they're going to make some law or like Trump is going to put some guy in an office or heading an agency that knows nothing about what has no history or has no knowledge about what it is to practice medicine or to practice environmental policy or what have you. I don't particularly, that freaks me out. That, upsets me. And I would rather not have that kind of thing happen.
Well, but Larry, Larry, that's why people like Tom Price got elected to the Congress. He became wealthy as a physician, and he was right-wing as hell. So when he ran, the right-wing think tanks got behind him and said, well, see, you can go in there and you can Rand Paul. There's right-wing doctors all over Congress, and it's by design. Because they can get in there and say, well, in my long years of practicing medicine, I have never seen a poor person get sick. And they can sit there and bloviate about freedom and liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. And we don't have much in the way of people to oppose them. But the issue you're raising was also, Larry, part and parcel of a discussion that took place during the Gorsuch hearings. Because Neil Gorsuch is particularly hostile to the idea that we would let scientists affect law and policy. And he, at one point in one opinion, he voted specifically to strike down that idea. I can't remember the statute in particular, but it was referenced in the hearings in which a Democrat said, we did a good job with this bill and we knew that the science would change and we left it sort of open-ended so the scientists could fill in the blanks as the data became available. And instead, the upshot, because these are the people who are funding him anyway, the upshot of Gorsuch's thinking, if you can call it that, was that, no, that's what we have right-wing think tanks for.
Yeah.
We don't want real science. We want bullshit science. We want fake science. We want fake statistics. And that's, that's why it is what it is. I mean, your point is well taken. But the reality, if you ever want to hear science actually treated as science again in the Congress, the only way to do it is to put those screaming imbeciles into the minority. Plain and simple.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, you know, the thing with, you know, Republicans, Larry, you have to keep in mind they hate government so much that they want to take over the government so they can destroy it, drown it, the whole drown it in the bathtub idea.
Deconstruct the administrative state.
Right, right. And basically make it so that nothing gets done because, I mean, things are very complicated. Congress leaves all kinds of gaps in legislation intentionally, as Bob said. Just because it expects the experts to be able to figure out, okay, they can promulgate regulations consistent with this, you know, with this law. Like, for example, the Clean Air Act and limitation of carbon discharge, okay? But Gorsuch and Bannon and Price and all those guys want to get rid of that stuff.
It was Dianne Feinstein, you know, who brought up the issue, and she was talking about the CAFE standards.
Right. Right, and that has to do with the mile per gallon requirements.
Right, and she was talking about being on the road to the 54 mile per gallon threshold.
Yeah, and there's no reason why that's not possible. I mean, you know, why should we have gas guzzlers? We're going to lose. You know, that was one of the reasons Detroit almost went bankrupt.
Yeah, but if you don't have gas guzzlers, you don't have freedom, Rick.
That's right. You don't have the rolling coalers as well. You need to have them, right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
By the way, note coming in back to our moment of shallow. Subject line, anyone watching? Ron and Raleigh ask, anybody watching Legion or Marvel's Iron Fist? Legion is the strangest thing I've watched in years. No one's mentioned Star Trek Discovery coming this fall. Yeah, I'm kind of looking. Well, of course I'm looking forward to Star Trek Discovery. And I'm still watching The Expanse. Agnes has gotten into that too. Let me note, because we got 13 minutes before the program ends. I guess we're going to end the week in a hole, because Steve put that $20 challenge on the table and it has not been touched. And if that was met, that'd take us to 180. And so even with the challenge met, which I hope it will be. There's still 180 bucks to fundraise, so it is what it is. And hopefully some of that will be whittled away by our subscribers over the weekend. One hopes, but this is also the kind of slow part of the month for subscribers. By the way, talking about hot peppers, Alma, whom we heard from for the first time the other night, said, come mess with green chilies here in New Mexico. Just try it. And our green-red chili wine. Yet, on the other hand, ICE is going to target Santa Fe, which declared itself a sanctuary city. Sad. And it is, because, I mean, I have yet to see any video evidence of poor little work-starved white folks lining up to pick chili peppers. And by the way, your moment of shallow again. For a good long while, Kroger offered under their private selection label a New Mexico green chili salsa. And some friends of mine who are New Mexicans said, you know, it's not great, but for West Virginia, it's a pretty close approximation. So naturally, understanding that it was something that I started buying. Anybody? What happened? They took it off the shelves.
Jeez.
So that was my one access to New Mexico green chilies, which, oh my God, across an omelet or something like that, or, well, through a straw, I don't care. I love them. And sorry, Bob. And the funny thing is, it was selling. Between me and the guy who runs the CT scanner at Summersville Memorial Hospital, we were buying every jar, and apparently we didn't know it until we talked together, I guess last August, when he told me, oh no, it's gone forever, man. We were racing each other to the grocery store without even knowing it, and buying it all up, and each of us, it's funny how these things work out, each of us would always leave one jar for the other person who was buying it. Because he looks at me and goes, you're the one jar guy? I go, no, you're the one jar guy. He goes, well, yeah, I buy it all except for one jar because I figured somebody else. Well, and I said, somebody does. And when I beat you there, I leave you one jar. There are moments when life on Earth is just precious. And that was one of them. Yeah, two hillbillies, you know, leaving one jar of New Mexico green chili salsa for the other person. And neither of us ever assuming that there could possibly be more than one other person who was into that New Mexico green chili salsa. And my daughter has been out there for a year and a half now. Has she mailed me so much as a half pint of salsa from New Mexico? Oh, hell no. I don't think she can find the post office.
Because I mean, I know you live in West Virginia, Bob. So, is it, you know, I don't want to send you stuff that, you know, might get, you know, taken out at the border. I'm afraid if I find a really good salsa,
you put it in a priority mailbox, it'll get there.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
Oh yes, oh yes. I mean, they didn't even try to slow down the ghost pepper cheese, so we know.
Or the cowbell,
and by the way, I reiterate that ghost pepper cheese on sourdough for a grilled cheese sandwich. Whoa, I've never had better. There just aren't a lot of grilled cheeses that will make your head sweat.
Wait a minute, can you even eat salsa right now?
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing the stuff I can. I found my last jar of New Mexico green chili salsa and just had a couple of spoonfuls out of the jar. Didn't bother me a bit, or didn't bother me any more than anything else does. It seems to be a matter of not filling up and not greasing up. So, I mean, go ahead. Because, I tried to eat a hamburger a month ago or so, and it just threw me into agonies. So we know I can't do that.
Well, you know, you remember, Bob, because of my depression, I wasn't really eating because I was terrified that I wasn't going to have health care. I was working on my weight loss anyway. But I'm slowly getting my appetite back. But one of the good things about depression is you lose weight. I mean, you know, like I said a couple of days ago, I'm down almost 32 pounds, but I haven't weighed in since last week. So I don't know how much I weigh because I weigh in tomorrow. But I told somebody that I had gotten so fat that I could steer. I could use my stomach to turn my steering wheel.
Yeah, but what happens when you can't wear the clothes you got?
Well, fortunately, I haven't always been this size. There was a time that Miss Tracy was a lot smaller.
There you go. You brought out the old clothes you stashed away.
Yes.
I'll get back into them someday.
I still have, you know what? And I, you know, those clothes that I should have gotten rid of a long time ago, but I was holding on to them in hopes that I would actually, you know, finally lose some weight. And thank God I didn't get rid of them. So because I was encroaching on a 22, and I am now slowly getting back into my 16s. So that's exciting. And Jan's happy because now I don't have to spend any money, because that was terrifying her, that I was going to spend money to buy. Because it's fun to show up for clothes, but when, you know, I have at least 60 more pounds to lose, so it wouldn't have been a good idea to go clothes shopping when you still got about 60 to 70 more pounds to lose.
Yeah, but as long as you got the standby as you're going down there.
Yep. I have clothes all the way down to a size 14. So if I get anything, if I get smaller than a size 14, then I have no choice but to go shopping. Oh, well.
Bob, there's a picture. Is that the sauce you're looking for?
Hang on. No.
No, it's Kroger.
It is private, and labor man just who's in New Mexico as well just asked me. It's private selection New Mexico green chili salsa, and it's freaking disappeared. I don't know if they just ran through their supply or their contract ended or what, but who knows. Hey, I've got some good news to announce because we're almost out of time. Thank you to Alma, who said, I will gladly send you New Mexico green chili. Thank you, Alma. Alma just met Steve's challenge, and then Frank stepped in. Thank you, Frank. Thank you so very much. And took us down to $105 to go. Thank you very, very kindly, Frank. That was huge. And then Charlie, our buddy Charlie in Tennessee, took us down to $85 to go. Thanks a very, very great bunch to all of you. And thank you to David. I didn't see these pop in. $65 to go. So, yeah, that's a lot better. That's a lot better by a long shot. $65 to go in fundraising. I'm trying to figure out what Agnes and I will binge watch tonight. Maybe this is a night to start Underground. Yeah, there's the picture. There's the picture in the chat, or in the Skype chat. Yep,
that's Gilmore Hot.
The Hot.
Bob, I'll tell you what. I'll throw in 20 to make it 25.
Okay, thank you, Rick. And that'll take us down to 40. Thank you, Rick. And it's been a... and Labor Man says he'll cover the 65. You only have to cover 40 now. Thank you, Labor Man. Thank you very much. So we finished okay after all.
Yay!
It's another Friday on the front porch miracle.
It's a Friday on the front porch miracle. It absolutely is. And thanks to all of you for jumping into the conversation this evening. We've had some serious. We've had some fun. And that's, I think, what in large part makes our little conversations here so special. They can go all over the place, and they can be a blast. And we can also, you know, talk about solutions to problems. Because problems, we got aplenty. Remember the words of Joe Keenihan in the Mate One movie. All we got in common is our misery. And the least we can do is share it. So thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you, Snork. Thank you, Larry. I hope your ears get better, buddy. And I hope you're able to get down to L.A. on the 28th. Thank you, Scott and Punky. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you, Tracy. And thank you very kindly, Sparky, for once again moderating and hosting the Horn Malloy Skype chat. And a quick announcement, not next week, because March ends next week, but April 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, I will be filling in for Mike Malloy as they take a little spring trip. So that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, week after this. So I'm excited about that. All right, then. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thank you for your kind contributions to keep the bills paid. Thank you. However you participate, thank you for just participating with the precious finite time of your life in this little conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you, News Ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to Ben Birch for riding to the rescue this evening when the stream had problems. And thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.